went to a bar, and they had this broken arcade machine on the left there. So I bought it, and I tore it apart, and I put a computer inside, and I painted it black, and I got a sticker on the outside, and now I have an arcade machine in my house. And it cost me like $50, because the bar didn't want it. And honestly, they were like, we'll give you money if you just get rid of it, because it's so ugly. Now, I could do that, and then just do it, and it would be done, but I chose to write a 7-part series on how I was doing it. Did I know what I was doing? I had no idea. And I wrote about the mistakes, and I wrote about the process, and it was a diary. If you do that, just write for yourself. There will be years that will go by when no one will read it. I'm serious. And the recognition that that is okay is important. These are my blog archives. I'm going to hold the down button. So I'm going to hold the down button while I continue to talk to you all. I wrote for many, many years. I want to just point out that I am still holding the down button. I wrote for so many years about all kinds of different technologies and nobody cared. But then I started realizing, may I point out, I am still holding the down button. If you would like, I'll hold spacebar, which will go by pages. May I point out, I am still holding the spacebar button. It is a marathon, not a sprint. Okay? You're going to start writing and no one is going to care. But what will happen is you'll Google one day and you'll find yourself as the answer to the question that you had. Some of us have had that experience, right? Where you Googled the question and you found yourself asking the question and you're like, and like no answer. And then you know you are truly alone on the internet. But I blogged about this stuff because I didn't want to waste my keystrokes. We'll talk about that in a minute. I blogged about all kinds of stuff, like gardening in my backyard to save money. And I called it Square Foot Gardening for Programmers. Because I figure programmers are different people, so I have like a whole grid system and an Excel sheet. It's all organized, right? You know, you do it. I've written like stupid applications and my blood sugar app. One time I was with my wife and she was making me watch this stupid Lifetime movie about relationships or something. And so while I was there, she thought I was doing email. I wrote a video game for our baby called Baby Smash. Where the kids can press the keys and then the characters sing and dance and stuff like that. She thought I was doing email. But then I put that online and I spent $5 and I got babysmash.com and it's been up there ever since. Anyone know about Baby Smash? Any Baby Smash people? It's open source. I took it, the code is crap. I took it and I put it on GitHub. And now people have taken it and translated it into other languages and extended it and made it different. My baby is 11. It's 11 years old. But this little piece of nothing that I wrote while I was watching a movie with my wife lives on. This is about being a social developer. Now, I've written a bunch of books that I'm not very proud of, so I won't tell you about those. I'm working on another book right now called Relationship Hacks, about being in a mixed marriage. Not mixed black and white, mixed geek and normal. This is our cover. I think it's pretty good. She's better looking than I am. She actually told me that she wanted to make the name of the book When Sixes Marry Nines. I'm pretty sure I'm not the nine. I wrote a little application with a friend of mine called My Echo that lets us talk into Siri. And then it goes up into the cloud and then down and then get pasted into Word because my hands hurt from typing too much. I had repetitive stress in my hands, so I dictate a lot of my emails. You can make these little projects. Make a domain for them. Buy a template. Throw together a Bootstrap site and put it up there, and it will live longer than if you just write it. You probably have code in your storage area somewhere that's interesting, but you never put it on GitHub because you're maybe embarrassed. Put it up on GitHub. Nobody cares. My code is crap. You've seen it. I started talking to people and asking smarter people than I about technology. Hansel Minutes, my podcast, is actually an excuse to talk to people. Now, here's the thing, though. I've been doing it for 566 episodes. That's every Thursday for over 500 weeks. That's 11 years of podcasts and over 250 hours of audio. Here's the trick. I needed to make it sustainable. I couldn't spend 4 hours editing, so I had to put together a system that allows me to call people, interview them. I record it on Skype. I put a little advertisement in the end, and I throw it up on the web. Try to keep it as simple as possible. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. If you all get energized from this talk and you go, I'm going to blog 5 times a week. Hanselman said it was good for my career. You'll do it for a week. And then what'll happen is you'll have a blog that we'll all visit in a year or two. And the very last blog post will be, I'm rededicating myself to blogging. I'm gonna do it this time. And then it's going to be a year old and 2 years old. So I try to blog twice a week. I try to do my podcast once a week. You can't do this stuff all the time. We have jobs. We have lives. We can't be staying up until 2 in the morning, right? It's not healthy. Every time you make something interesting, try to put it out there in some way, even if no one looks at it. It could become popular later. I did a video with my friend Rob Connery, just using a regular iPhone camera and a little tripod, and we went around town, and we basically did a how to be a speaker, and we threw it on the web. It's called The Art of Speaking, if you have a Pluralsight subscription. A friend of mine went and wrote a book called Soft Skills. It was basically a manual on how to be a developer. It was not about the hard skills, but the soft skills, like marketing yourself and productivity. This is a great book to take a look at. People write stuff, and they don't put it out there in the world. So what I would encourage people to think about, if it's appropriate, and this is why I want to have this conversation, for those of you who came in a little bit late, one of the things I mentioned at the beginning of the talk is we, those of us who came from Microsoft Corporate, are very conscious of the fact that it's not appropriate for me to fly in, drop the knowledge, and then fly off, because that's me talking at you and telling you how things ought to be. I'm telling you what worked for me, and this is a toolkit. And you need to decide, well, what's going to work for you in your business, in your tech, in your career, in your culture, in your country, in your region, in your continent. Take the parts that make sense, toss the other ones. Make sense? Also want to point you to this. I did a 2-hour documentary. It's totally free. Getinvolvedintech.com. It's like a movie. We made a movie because you can do it for cheap now. We did it in iMovie. But it's really nice, and I like it. It's free, and it's at getinvolvedintech.com. And it's kind of an extended version of this talk, and it'll tell you about all the things you need to do if you are going to be social. So let's talk a little bit about this. A social developer is a developer that puts... Everyone has an excuse for not blogging. Usually it's, I have nothing to say. Sometimes it's, what I work on is a secret. I actually worked in banking in the U.S., and I blogged all about the generalized problems of banking. I did a thing with check imaging where you take a photograph of a check and you don't have checks here because you guys are like super advanced. We still write checks in America, I know. The most magical thing though is to take a photograph of the check and then it gets scanned in. That was all secret work that I was doing. I generalized it into general image processing and I wrote a whole series of blogs about it. While what you work on might be secret, there's still ways to express it. But here's the thing. You may think you need to be an expert to blog about something. I don't want to hear about experts. I want to hear about your journey. If you look at my blog, almost all of them include something like, here's something I'm working on. I'm playing with this. I'm not really sure if this is right. Let me know in the comments, right? Blogs are not a place to say, here is the correct way to write an Angular application. No. Blogs are... Look at the experimenting I'm doing with Angular. I like this, I don't like that. And you can then cultivate a community and a network of friends that will hopefully say things like, oh, well, I think it's better to do it this way. And then you learn, and then you write another blog post that said, oh, my commenter so-and-so said do it this way, and it's much better. And then there's a back and forth. Does that make sense? Also, the argument that everything has already been written. you did something cool this week at work. You did. You just didn't write about it. Or even worse, you wrote an email about it to someone at work. But no one saw that because nobody reads email, right? I write about all kinds of stuff. People think I'm an expert in 3D printing. I don't know anything about 3D printing. So I wrote a blog post about the basics of 3D printing. That's a pretty bold statement. Here is how 3D printing works in 2015. From someone with 16 hours experience. And I just literally went hour by hour. Like, I unboxed it and I put it together. Because I'm being straight with you that I'm an amateur and I'm learning. But why did I write this up? Why did I write it up? Here's why. I really believe in conserving your keystrokes. This is so important. I talked about this a moment ago and I said I had trouble with my hands. Those of you who are having bad posture and bad typing and all the young people, I'm telling you, you're going to regret it. Lift with your legs, young people. That's all I'm saying. You don't want back problems. You don't want hand problems. So conserve your keystrokes means this. There is a finite number of keystrokes left in your hands before you die. How old are you, sir? 34? 24. Okay. It's 24. And how fast do you type? 100 words a minute? 75 words a minute? You look speedy. You move fast? So he's 24. I made a blog about this, and I decided to write a website called Keys Left. So he's 24, and we'll say he types 75 words a minute. So now we're going to calculate. He has 285. Oh, sorry. It's counting down. This is how many keystrokes you have left before you die, man. 285 million. And I want to point out it's counting down right now. You're losing... You're losing keystrokes as we sit here. So think about that. What does that mean? Assuming you live to 90, okay, you have 66 years left in your life, young man. That is 570 computer programs that you have left, or 28,000 love letters, or a million emails to your boss. Where do you want your keystrokes to go? When I say this, it's a joke, but it's real. You do have a finite number. You know, Siri and Cortana are not going to make it so you can type faster. There's a finite number left, so what are you going to do with them? You often write, write emails at work, and then suddenly that one paragraph email becomes four or five paragraphs, and you send it to three or four people, and maybe they reply, but do you really feel like they read it? No. You just wasted 2,000 keystrokes on people you don't even care about. What you can do is put those keystrokes anywhere but email. Literally anywhere but email. Let's say that you email me afterwards, right? You email, hey, Scott, great talk, you're the best. M-Pesa, here's some money. because I take tips. He says, but you know, I had a great question, and he tells me his question. Okay, and it's an amazing question, like, oh, shoot, I should have said that. What an amazing question. I should probably write him back, right? I don't know you. You seem nice, but I'm not going to give you 2,000 free keystrokes. But it was a really good question. Ooh, that was a good question. I will write a blog post about that, and I will paste you a link. Great question. Paste. Boom. I've just saved 2,000 keystrokes. Every single page view that sees that post, that's 2,000 free keystrokes that I get back. I'm dead. I get hit by that ice cream truck. People keep visiting my stuff. It lives on. Anywhere with a link is where you put your keystrokes. Doesn't necessarily mean a blog. Maybe you work at your office and someone keeps asking a technical question. Build a FAQ, right? Frequently asked questions. For all the dumb stuff your coworkers ask. Put the keystrokes in SharePoint. Put them in a blog, an internal blog. Put them in OneNote. Put them literally anywhere but email. Email is where keystrokes go to die. I write everything on my blog that I can that's public, and everything that's private I put on OneNote, and I send emails internally with links. I made a promise to myself that I would not send long emails to people because it's a waste of my time and theirs. If you think about that and all of the different things and all the times you've answered repetitive questions, you'll start building up a knowledge base of the things you know about. Then there's your blog. There's your book. Maybe your blog becomes a book or it becomes a PDF that you sell online or whatever. When you do something, you can do it in multiple mediums. Let's say that you write up your experience on being an Angular developer. That's cool. Did you do a YouTube about that, like a screencast? Did you write a PDF and sell it for a buck, getting started with Angular? Did you do a podcast? When you did the podcast, did you do a transcript? Because that's text too, right? Each of these is a way to make content with minimal effort. You see what I'm saying? The same exact concept, getting started with Angular. You can repeat multiple times. And that's a way that you stay relevant. But you also have to be reminded that everyone is an expert at something. There's all kinds of stuff that you know in your life experiences and the technologies that you work on that I don't know about. If you do this a couple times a week, an hour here, an hour there, I'm not talking about a major time commitment, then people will start Googling and they'll start hitting your site. You'll have descriptive titles about whatever the thing is that you're interested in, and then it'll start showing up on Google, and then you slowly build an audience. Don't expect to build a million page view site overnight, but even if a couple of dozen people, let's say a couple dozen people really dig your stuff, that's a couple dozen people visiting you a couple of times a week, that can turn into hundreds and hundreds of people that you're gonna help. And that's hundreds and hundreds of emails you didn't have to write, and thousands and tens of thousands of keystrokes that you didn't have to waste. Does that make sense? With no additional time spent by you. I also think it's really important for people to own their words. We spend a lot of time arguing with strangers on the internet. All those keystrokes are wasted. I don't think anyone's gonna change their vote because you argued with them on Twitter or Facebook. So I don't put those keystrokes out there. Instead, I put them into constructive stuff. I've talked to a number of people right now who argue about, you know, politics or whatever, and they'll spend thousands and thousands of keystrokes trying to convince an egg on Twitter to change their mind. I don't think the egg is gonna change their mind. Instead, spend it on building your corpus of information, the amount of information that you have available to you. Twitter, are you all into Twitter? Any Twitter people here? Yeah? Twitter, I'm finding, is a really, really helpful place around Twitter chats. This is something I think is becoming popular, but a lot of people don't realize what it is. These are scheduled chats using a hashtag. One of the best examples is Code Newbies. Code Newbies is this great community, Code Newbies. And it's run by this woman named Saran Yitbarak, and she put together this community because she felt that people in online were not supportive of people learning to code. Here's the part that is interesting. She wasn't an expert when she started this. She wanted a place that was safe to learn how to code, and she wasn't a coder, so she built that place. She talked about building the website in Ruby and learning Ruby, and she started doing these weekly Twitter chats and podcasts where she interviews people. Every Wednesday, she does this Twitter chat with the Code Newbies hashtag and talks about all these different things, and I found it to be really useful, and it's all based on Twitter, and you don't even necessarily need to sign up for Twitter to do it. You can just search for that tag. And we discovered this really cool, supportive community of people out there. And what was significant about it is that she put herself out there. Now, this can be challenging. There's a lot of creepy people on the internet, a lot of evil people. Some women don't want to put their faces on the internet. That's fine. You can have an identity as long as it's consistent. I see both men and women not using their real names. They'll use like their cyber name or whatever. But make sure that when you have your avatar, it's the same everywhere. So if you don't want to put your personal information out there, that's totally fine, or your location or your surname. But have an identity, get your username everywhere, so then when you go to an interview or you put something on your CV, you can say, yeah, I'm cyber dude, whatever, cyber girl, whatever, and they look and Twitter and they see your tweets, and they go to your GitHub, and it's got your, whatever your avatar is, doesn't even have to be your face, and they can learn about you. So you can have an identity as long as it is unique and it is consistent. Does that make sense? It doesn't always have to be your real name and your real location. Another thing to watch out for is on GitHub, there's this contributions area down here that sometimes people feel sad about, because it's green if you're coding all the time and putting stuff in GitHub, and it's kind of pasty green if you're like me. The darker green indicates that I committed a lot on that day, and the light greens show small things. So 300 contributions in a year, basically, you know, small things. I wasn't working actively on an open source project. I've improved that graph by just doing the little stupid projects I do on the side out in the open. If you're making a website for your church, as long as it's not private, it doesn't include passwords, work on it on GitHub. It's free. The repositories are free. It gives you bug tracking and issue tracking. It gives you code, you know, source code. It gives you an opportunity to learn how to use Git. And it makes your graph nice and green. And you can go and say, when you're doing an interview, you say, yeah, I built a website for my church or for my kids' school or whatever. These are all opportunities to build a reputation online. Another example is things like Stack Overflow. You'll notice that this avatar here has more hair. That's fine, but it's the same one everywhere, right? It's the identifiable Hanselman avatar. This just reiterates that point of you, whether you're public or not, need to be the same you everywhere so that all those profiles add up. Stack Overflow is a tough spot to jump into, and I've been on it for a number of years, but I'm not super active. But this is a great place to put your keystrokes if you haven't started a blog yet. The reason is that those keystrokes get a link. So you can answer a question on Stack Overflow, and if it gets marked as the answer, it gets a link. You can then blog about that, you can link it to people, you can tweet it to people. It has a link, it's not hidden from view. Does that make sense? As opposed to you email me a technical question and I email you the answer, it's one-to-one. That wastes everybody's time. You might answer me a technical question, I would say go ask it on Stack Overflow and send me the link. Then I would answer it on Stack Overflow and then we both win. Makes sense though, doesn't it? Yeah. Now, how common are user groups and meetups here? Some people said not yes, but it doesn't sound like it's a huge thing. So, study groups getting together. There are formal user groups, but sometimes user groups, in my opinion, get too complicated where they have like a governance structure and then there's the president, the vice president, and the treasurer. I think that's fine. There's a place for big user groups. But one of the things I don't think that we do enough as developers is get together and work on stuff together. Just coding as a team. Start asking around at work, your friends, the cool people that you've met at this great conference, if they want to have a study group with you. Remember what I said before about imposter syndrome. If you suffer in silence, what's going to happen is you're going to get a book on Angular or whatever you're trying to learn. And you're going to go home in the dark and the kids are asleep and you're going to stare at it and you're going to feel crappy about yourself and you're going to say, I am never going to learn this. Everyone knows more than I do. This sucks. I am alone and I won't be able to learn this. That's a common thing. We all feel like that. Do the opposite. Ask the other people at your work or the people you met here, do you want to meet once a week and just talk about Angular and we can collaborate? Or maybe we can Skype and share our screens. I am regularly updating my blog with a gentleman that I have never met before in England who's interested in the blogging software that I work on, and we're upgrading it, and every Thursday at 4, because it's like, I don't know, whatever time it is, his time in England, we get together and we work on it. And we sit there and we share our screens and we talk in a non-judgmental way, because neither of us are professionals. The challenge is admitting that. Now, I realize that I've been in software for 25 years and I have a job, so it comes from a place of privilege for me to say I'm still learning and I don't know what I'm doing. If you are just getting started and you're just coming out of school, I realize I'm asking a lot for you to say I have no idea what I'm doing. Don't put that on your CV. But talk to your friends and say, I really want to learn Android development and I think I know what I'm doing. Are you working on Android? I don't want you to have a relationship like this. Can you help me with Android? I will help you with Android. That's not a balanced relationship. Find someone who is at about the same skill level and pair program as a team. And then, rather than a user group with a president, a treasurer, and all that kind of crap, maybe put together a small meetup and say, I'm making a study group of 6 people or less that are going to talk about Android once a week, and we'll meet at the mall or whatever. We'll find a place to meet. Doesn't even have to have a projector. We'll sit around and we'll be there. We can meet at the library. These are cheap, really powerful ways to become better. And the goal here is that you're not sitting alone in the dark with a book feeling crappy about yourself. You're sitting in a group with the mall feeling crappy about yourself. But at least you're doing it as a group. Does that make sense? This is so important. Any opportunity to network and find someone that shares your passion for learning is important. When I'm learning things, sometimes I'll record them with Camtasia, which is like a screen recording system, and there's free ones like CamStudio, and I'll put them up on YouTube. Yeah, mean people will say, you're an idiot, you clicked here 5 minutes in, and I block them. I have no interest in your negativity. Seriously, my block hand is strong. What I want is positive, empathetic people who want to learn with me. You know what I'm saying? Here's the other thing we can do, is you can speak at conferences like this. That might seem overwhelming. We actually went and we did a video because we were sitting around as friends talking about getting started speaking. And I said, this is great. We need to do a video about that. So I was up in Seattle, and we had, you can't see in the background here, but they're on Skype. So Donovan on the right in the blue and Maria on the left, as well as Casey and Kendra. We had here 5 people from all over the world, different levels of experiences, different genders, different races, different levels of experience. Kendra just got out of college. Casey went to Harvard. I did not. Donovan's been doing this for 20 years. All these different people talking about what works and what doesn't for speaking. And if you've ever done any kind of public speaking, you'll find that nothing gets you ready for a talk than talking about something you don't know anything about. Right? Teachers are usually just one chapter ahead in the book. So what we do is we talked about that. You can go and watch that video. It's all on Channel 9. It's all on my blog. And you can learn about it. And we talked about how to get started with speaking. Some people think that it is who you know, and you know, you get the hookup, and then you go and you give your speech. But it's not about speaking at big events with a lot of very kind people. It's also brown bags, brown bag lunches at your jobs. Do anyone do those? Right? Have you thought about speaking at a brown bag? That's another great way to set up a small learning group. But again, you have to have supportive people, and you have to insist on it. Because they can use it as an excuse to say, look, they made a study group. They don't know what they're doing. But you spin it the way that we're going to make this company better. We're going to teach everybody Angular. I'm learning it. Let's all learn it together. Or whatever technology that is. You find the balance between not knowing what you're doing and trying to lift everyone else up. You're trying to share your energy. You want to put out good work. Don't waste your keystrokes. And then share your experiences. And I believe that that energy will come back to you. Secondarily, the other benefit of this is it is a way of marketing yourself. You don't want to be super slick with fancy website and stuff. Just be consistent. Professional usernames, right? You don't want to be like Hot Buns 1984 or whatever. You know, your Hotmail account from college is probably not appropriate. You know, be pro. You know what I'm saying? Be kind. Add value. And if you make a mistake, lean into it. Be honest. If you don't, when I blog something and it's wrong, I'll do a follow-up, I'll edit the post, and I'll go, I blogged this, I said it was the recommended way, it wasn't. And I'll be super, super nice about it. Also, consider finding a mentor. Find someone kind, not who's 10 years, 20 years ahead of you, but just a couple years. Find someone that is you in the future. And see if they will bring you along. And find someone who's positive, who's not going to hold you down. Because we don't want to have this kind of crabs in a bucket situation, right? You know that term, crabs in a bucket? When one crab pulls out of the bucket, the other crabs pull him down and say, well, you're not getting out of here unless we're all getting out. Find someone, if you're 25, find someone who's 30 who took the similar path and they can give you tips. And if you're only 25, find someone who's 20 and mentor them and give them suggestions, and you'll learn from each other. So why don't we do, we have about 5 to 10 minutes left. We can have some Q&A, and you can tell me whether or not you think there was any value here, what worked and what didn't. Is that cool? All right, so that's my material. What do you think? Are you just, you're so shocked with the awesomeness, you have nothing to say. That's cool too. What do you think about that? Were you already thinking this stuff, but you never put it into one talk? That's one of the things about a good talk. You're like, yeah, I thought that, and I've thought all of this stuff. I just never put it in a line and then implemented it in my life. Got questions back there? Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. So you might know about the Microsoft MVP program. You can email HandyK, H-A-N-D-E-K, at Microsoft, if you are into technology, not necessarily even Microsoft technology. Could be Node, could be Java. It just might have a Microsoft spin because you put it on Azure or you use Visual Studio or whatever. Someone who is an MVP does all of those things that we just described: consistent, kind, productive, useful. And then they get awarded this thing for a year, for the previous year's work. And then MVPs get insight into what's going on inside of Microsoft. We'll put you on an NDA, we'll make you in the secret club, and then we'll tell you about the stuff that we're working on, and then you can go out and talk about it, things like that. All of those kinds of things that I described that one could do about putting yourself out there and being consistent and being positive about learning can all add up. So if you want to nominate a coworker or even nominate yourself, we would then go out, exactly like I described. We would Google you with Bing, we would look up your name, and probably wouldn't find you with Bing, and then we'd go back and we'd use Google, and that's cool. And then we would see, like, oh, well, look, she's got an active GitHub, she's got a great blog, she's doing interviews, she's doing Women in Tech Luncheon. This is a cool, well-rounded person. And then that person could be an MVP for a year or two. Make sense? Okay, so thank you for that reminder. What do you think about these things? Is anyone beginning to do that, or had you thought about it, and maybe this was just the push that you needed? I need some feedback. Consistency. And the thing, consistency is very difficult. You have to set yourself up for success. As I said before, if I say, I'm going to blog, then great. Hanselman says blog, I'll blog 5 days a week. You won't. You'll do it 4 times and you'll give up. Once a week. That's reasonable. Set reasonable, consistent goals and promise yourself that you'll do those. And if you fall off, get back on and do it again. Sir? So Facebook's an interesting one. So Facebook is what's called a walled garden, right? It's a place online that you don't own the URL, that you can put your content, and you're basically giving your keystrokes away for free to the Facebook company. Medium is the same way. Now, Medium's a good way to get started, and I post on Medium sometimes. But when I post on Medium, which is another walled garden, I link back to my blog. My blog is my domain, my server. I own it. I believe that we should own our words. And it's wonderful that you asked that question, sir, because you didn't realize it. But come on, computer. I've actually written about this. Hanselman. I just add Hanselman in front of all my Google searches. Your words are wasted. There you go. I blogged about this in 2012. And I said, you are not blogging enough. You're pouring your words into closed and walled gardens. And I explain, why are people writing, where they write, and what value there is in writing. Now, if you choose to write on Facebook, that's fine. But pick a place, as we say, put all the wood behind one arrow. If you're going to cultivate a community on Facebook because you don't want the overhead of a blog, that's fine. But just be aware, you could lose control of it at some point. They could kick you out, you could be reported, you could be shut down. You don't own your words at Facebook. Scroll up, please. Your words are wasted. Google for that. Hanselman, your words are raised. Yeah. There you go. Cool. Sir? Say it again, I'm not understanding.
What do you have for you who are naturally shy?
Naturally shy people, yeah. Yeah, that's a tough one. So this gentleman's bringing a good question. He says, what about naturally shy? And then when you get criticism from other developers, it's really tough because a lot of people have, and this sometimes is gender related, where if you are a phony, you act the opposite. So you may have other developers you've worked with who feel like, oh, my code is perfect. Why are you insulting my code, right? And then they get all like, you are not your code, right? You and I could work on something, and if we're friendly and we respect each other, you can say to me, you know, Scott, this is not good code. You didn't just say, you know, Scott, you're a bad person. You said you're not, you know, you're not, this is not good code. And that's okay for that not to be good code. So you want to be thoughtful about your criticism, how you criticize people. But you also want to teach people how to criticize you. If someone's mean to you and is like crapping all over you about your code, you need to remind them that your code and your person are separate things. Don't tolerate non-constructive criticism from coworkers, bosses, or communities. We are all learning. We all make mistakes. Don't let somebody treat you bad like that. That's a good thing to bring up. So criticism is tough. It is difficult, though, because you have to own it. You have to say, yeah, I don't really, that hurts, that criticism, but you're probably right. I wonder if I blogged about that before. You are not your code. Oh my goodness, I wrote about that in 2013. Now, here's the challenge to your point. This is good. Your code does affect your reputation. It is possible you are a bad programmer. I don't know if you're a bad programmer or not. You seem very nice. But you don't know, right? Now, here's something that happened recently. Someone shared some code on GitHub. Some developer snark, that means being a smartass, started. And then it was people teasing someone about their code. Here's what's not cool, though. That code solved someone's problem. It didn't have to be pretty. It can still work. So remembering that there's religious arguments about whether or not something works versus whether you feel good about it. True story, one of the very nice tech people who is putting together this conference, who owned, he's the guy who owned the main stage. He organized all the tech for the audio and the video and everything, right? When I came in, my laptop didn't project right. So he had to like do some stretchy thing, and he was actually reprogramming the video thing underneath the stage, like 10 minutes before I went on stage yesterday, okay? And I asked him, I said, so that's amazing, you got it to work. That's so great, thank you. And he says, yeah, I don't feel good about it though. He hacked it together. Did you guys see any problem at all during the keynote? No, it was fantastic. But he was criticizing himself, he was beating himself up because he came up with a hack to reprogram the video thing. So in that case, he was his worst critic. He was beating himself up. And I think that's something we also need to watch out for, is to not beat ourselves up. Great question. Anything else good? Did you get any value out of this? Good, good. Thank you. Yes, sir. You have a question? Someone else have a question? Time is up, she said. Okay. Good question, sir. What's the best license to use for open source? When you're blogging? Oh, for your code. That's a great point. This is an excellent point. So when you blog, it's like code, you're putting it out there. So the gentleman is saying, what is the best license? Thank you for asking that, that's smart. I licensed, where is it? Somewhere around here. Creative Commons, creativecommons.org, here's the URL, is a license where you can go up and you can say how you want your work to be expressed. You click on choose a license and you say, all right, I want a license for my blog. I want people to copy it or not copy it. Do you want people to copy paste your blog and steal it? Allow adaptations of your work, to be shared. Yes, as long as they share alike. So yes, share and share alike. If you are going to share my stuff, you got to go and share it, and you need to be able to share your things. Allow commercial uses of your work. You want people to make money off of you? No. See the dollar, the little dollar sign with the slash just appeared. As you're making, as you're clicking here, it's writing that license. So then you can go and say, I want to do non-commercial share and share alike 4.0, and then there's a little thing at the bottom that you put on your web page that says, if you're going to use this, make sure that you put who it was from and you don't make money on it and you tell everyone about it. So when you put stuff out there, you can decide how you want to be treated and whether or not it's going to be public domain or not. So what license? A Creative Commons license, whichever one makes you happy. Good question. Cool? Look at all the people in the back. I'm sorry there are no chairs for you. Cool. I think we're all done then. That's what I got.